Hey there, better leaders. This is Danny Sunshine Bauer, host of the podcast, and my mission in life to help you school leaders fight isolation and frustration via a leadership community in order to gain clarity and find solutions to your greatest challenges. If you get value from today's show, you can show some love back to me by subscribing and leaving a rating and review where you're listening right now. I can serve more school leaders by having a better ranking. That's tied 100% to subscriptions, reviews, and shares on social media. In today's show, I talk with the Paul Bambrick Santoyo, the author of Leverage Leadership 2.0. And we're going to explore the story behind writing a 2.0 version of Leverage Leadership, how Paul takes a breath given the demands of his leadership role, and why practice is so important for school leaders and educators. Thanks for spending some time with me listening to this podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. And before we jump into the episode, let's take some time to thank our show sponsors. A lot of school leaders talk about improving students' soft skills to help them succeed in their rigorous coursework. The problem is that most leaders just talk about it without actually doing anything. You can improve your students' non-cognitive skills today by checking out an amazing program called Organized Binder. Learn more at organizedbinder.com. Students who participate in the Conrad Challenge don't learn to think outside the box. There is no box. Learn how innovation takes off and soars beyond the confines of a box at conradchallenge.org.
I'm Steve Mileto from Teaching, Learning, Leading K-12, a proud member of the Education Podcast Network, just like the show you're listening to right now. The opinions expressed are those of the individual hosts. Make sure you check out all the other great podcasts at edupodcastnetwork.com. And get ready, because the learning begins in 3, 2, 1.
All right. Hey there, better leaders. This is an exciting moment for me today. I'm here with the author of Leverage Leadership 2.0, Paul Bambrick Santoyo. And he is the Chief Schools Officer for Uncommon Schools and the founder and dean of the Leverage Leadership Institute, creating proof points of excellence in urban schools nationwide. Paul is the author of multiple books, including Driven by Data, Leverage Leadership 2.0, Get Better Faster, A Principal's Manager's Guide to Leverage Leadership, and Great Habits, Great Readers. Bambrick Santoyo has trained over 20,000 school leaders worldwide in instructional leadership, including multiple schools that have gone on to become the highest gaining or highest achieving schools in their districts, states, and or countries. Prior to these roles, Bambrick Santoyo co-founded the Relay National Principals Academy Fellowship and spent 13 years leading North Star Academies in Newark, New Jersey, whose results are among the highest achieving urban schools in the nation. He also taught for 6 years in a bilingual school in Mexico City. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Well, excuse me if I'm vibrating with excitement as we get into this interview. I'm going to do my best to stay grounded. I'm definitely going to be present. But I'm just super pumped to have you on the show. And I'd like to start, Paul, just hearing about your day-to-day. And what would you describe as your perfect day at work?
Well, I love what I do. So there are a lot of days that I would call perfect days. And so I guess I could describe a day I just had last week that for me was a great day. So I currently lead 53 schools with my colleague, Julie Jackson. But I particularly focus on high school because that seems to be the nut no one wants to crack. Mm. And so I recently designed a process by which I visit all 9 of my high schools in 5 days. And that particularly is challenging because they're in 4 different cities. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to see them back to back to back. And I started from the highest achieving school and then worked my way down. And the power of that was by the time I got to every successive school, I had a new idea and suggestion to share for them, not from my own expertise, but from what I learned from the school I just visited.
Right, right.
So here's what it looked like. Like I went to a school and I was looking at how students are learning this time as I walked around. And as I arrived, I walked around classes with the principal and asked them what they saw. And we looked at student work as we were observing the classes and saying, where do you see the kids are learning? Where are they struggling? And then I modeled a weekly data meeting, which is a term I use for what could be called a professional learning community, where I actually led a meeting for a group of English teachers looking at their student work. I think this vignette might be helpful for you, so I'll go into a little detail. The students had to read a wonderful task in 10th grade English. They had to read Chief Justice Warren's majority opinion on Brown versus the Board of Education, why segregation was unfair. And they also had to read the opinion of Justice Waring, Julius Waring, who was on the district court, who a year before had ruled that segregation was okay. But Waring was the minority opinion, and his argument was the foundation that Warren used to argue why segregation should be overturned. So they both had the same core argument. The students had to read it and find out what was the same, but also what was different. And if you looked at student work, the students missed the difference completely. They knew all about civil rights and Brown versus the Board of Education. So they found the similarities that this has a negative impact on children. But Warren argued that this was creating inferiority complexes for Black children, while Julius Waring was actually arguing that it was creating prejudice for all children. And so it's negatively impacting both Black and white children. At the time, there was no other race discussed but Black and white.
Those are only two.
Right. And so the students missed that completely. And so I led a weekly data meeting, and what I discovered was that even some of the teachers had missed it, because you're so entrenched in sort of the beauty of this core argument that you don't realize the subtleties if you're not reading closely. And then I had the teachers practice what it would look like to teach this skill of finding subtle differences between texts. And all of the instructional leaders in the school have watched me model this meeting, and then we debriefed it afterwards about what were our takeaways. And then I set up a system by which the next week their manager would follow up with them to look at their data meetings they were running with their teachers to see how they got their teachers to find the gap and practice teaching differently. And I guess I would describe that as a perfect day, because I think what I love the most is when I have a chance to immerse myself and to learn from the exemplar, to find the best teacher in one of my schools and the best leader and learn from them first. I always tell my leaders, start from the exemplar, because if not, you'll have no water with which to extinguish the fire when you get there. But then after that, spread that model. Say to my leaders, listen, I'm not going to ask you to do something I wouldn't do. So I'll model leading a meeting, even if I'm not going to do it perfectly, and then give you the chance to then follow that and do it yourself. And I felt like in a day, I was able to do more in 5 days than I normally am able to accomplish in terms of impact. There was a day in the life of me from last week.
I appreciate you giving us a insight into that. And thank you for sharing that story. I'd like to follow up with then this notion of spreading ideas of exemplars or great teaching. You know, it could be anybody within the organization, but it's more about a culture, right? Building a powerful culture and spreading those ideas. People write in or you know, they ask, connect on social media all the time. You know, how do we do this within our school, Danny? And so how would you answer that? You see something great, you want to spread it. And what's your system for spreading great ideas?
So I think we all create our own glass ceiling of what we think is accomplishable based on what we have experienced. And so based on the schooling we received, we sometimes can't envision a school. We can envision it a tad greater than what we experienced, but we can't really blow it up and think even bigger. Even as much as we try, we're limited by our own experience. And so the way you change that is by expanding the experience of what excellence is. So if I show a principal a video of another principal giving feedback to a teacher, they see that principal actually getting them to practice as if they were a basketball player or a volleyball player or a piano player. All of a sudden they're like, wow, like that works. And I see that in a school like mine. And so there's a phrase I use with my leaders that if you want them to get it, get them to see it. Because to see it is to believe it. And that's why I try to collect, and you'll see in each one of my books, there's always videos that accompany people. Because I don't believe if you just hear, you just read me write about it, you believe it. I want you to see it. And I want you to have a picture of it that you can take with you and an image that you can use to help you along the way. But it's one thing to see an exemplar. That at least allows you to break your ceiling and imagine something bigger than what you're used to. But the second thing is you have to have someone be able to name for you what that person did. Mm. One of my mentors is John Saffir. He wrote the book, The Skillful Teacher. And I remember when I was a novice principal, he came to visit me and observe classes with me. And one of us said, you know what, we should get this teacher to observe this other teacher who's doing it better so they can learn from him. And he said, that might work, but I caution you on one thing. If you send that teacher to observe on their own, I promise you they will observe for the wrong thing. Mm. If you don't name for them what to see, they won't see it. And so that's why I talk about name it. That one of our work is to codify what someone is doing in a way that makes it simpler to hold on to. Mm-hmm. If I can name the action in a way that is concrete and easy to understand, I can make it more memorable for you to know what to do. I think a master of this is Doug Lamov in Teach Like a Champion.
Yes.
He says something like, you know, invisible column, move your neck as if you're looking around a column to look at students. And it's like this beautifully memorable phrase that gives you a sense of what it looks like to have eyes in the back of your head as we talk mm-hmm. about great teachers. Mm-hmm. That's what I call name it. But then the last thing is you don't really change who you are until you practice, until you do it. And so I like to say that your professional development, your leadership is only as good as what you practice. Steph Curry, Tom Brady, and I'm not a Patriots fan, but I admire him deeply.
Right.
They don't become great just by envisioning and talking and reading a book. Mm-hmm. They practice. And in education, we have a fear of the same level of practice that we see in music, in medicine, in athletics. And we have to say to ourselves, if we want to be great, we need to practice. Right. And if we want our teachers to be great, we have to invite them to practice. And so the mantra I've just given you, see it, name it, do it, I think applies to our leadership and what we can do to develop our teachers and what we can do to develop school systems. Give them exemplars they can see. Name what they're doing in those exemplars and do it. Practice it before you try it. And that's become sort of a rallying mantra for me in all that I do and in every problem I want to solve is see it, name it, do it.
Yeah. See it, name it, do it. I love that mantra. And you know, I don't know if it's that our industry is steeped in this idea that as a professional, we don't have to practice. I'm not sure what all the barriers might be, but you know, you brought up Steph Curry. I love the Warriors, how they play. I mean, he's one of my favorite basketball players. And you absolutely know he's taking thousands of layups, free throws, 3-point stuff he could do in his sleep. But he still commits to that rigorous routine of practice to make it muscle memory, right? So that you don't have to think about how to do this specific move with excellence. It just, it naturally happens. And when people say, you know, you make it look so easy, they forget the decades of hard work right. they put in with this practice to get to that point, right?
And that they don't stop practicing. Steph Curry still out practices everybody. You don't get somewhere and like, I've made it, I don't practice anymore. Mm-hmm. Every great teacher I've met, they're at home on a Sunday night, revising their lesson plan, even if they've taught it for 20 years. And they're looking at a piece of student work and saying, this individual student needs something new I haven't given to my previous student. What am I going to do differently? Mm-hmm. I think the idea of do it is like, let's create a culture where we say practice is something valued. And what I've discovered in my experience with teachers and school leaders, there's always, and in every profession, as a side note, I had a chance to do a workshop for a group of nurses and doctors about how to give feedback.
Yeah.
And it was amazingly similar. As adults, we feel like we're above practice and we don't need it anymore. But as soon as you break that barrier by saying, just try it with me, will you try to practice with me? If they see themselves get better, they're hooked. Mm-hmm. And when I tell people, how do you create a, people ask me, how do you create a culture of practice in a school where nobody's ever practiced before? Mm-hmm. I say, do a rollout, show some videos of Steph Curry, show some videos of a musician practicing, let them see what it looks like, then say, let's try it. And what I say to a leader, all you have to do is remain emotionally constant, make it feel like it's normal. Don't be nervous. don't be strict. Just like, no, this is just a normal thing. Dive into the practice too. If you're going to ask them to practice, you got to do it as well. And then just be consistent with it. The fourth time you ask someone to practice, they're going to be like, ah, this is the way we do things. And by the fifth time, they're going to say, will you please allow me to practice? Because I feel myself getting better. And they start asking for it.
Right.
But the only limitation is ourselves, our fear of like the reaction they might have. But I have yet to meet a school that if you work through that opening stage of discomfort, doesn't get to a place where they embrace it and want it because they realize they're becoming great by doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, it's that welcoming, creating that welcoming environment. I'm thinking of another connection of Jordan. I remember a story of him working with his performance coach and they had just won a championship. And the coach is like, all right, well, when do you want to get started on the next championship, right? And he says, I'll see you at the court tomorrow, 6 a.m., right? And
yeah.
they're cheers and champagne. So, you know, they're about to celebrate the champ. But here's the thing, like, I'm going to work for the next championship tomorrow. And I guarantee every other NBA player, they're taking time off. And I'm not saying there's not room to rest and recuperate and balance and those kind of things. But just the investment in practice, you're driving home a good point. So create that welcoming environment. Pretend that it's normal. Show those videos, like you said. And if you do it enough, it is. That's going to become a part of the culture. So, all right, we could nerd out and turn this into a basketball podcast, but I do want to ask you about Leverage Leadership 2.0. And could you tell me the story? So there's the Leverage Leadership, the first version. Now there's 2.0. And, you know, it's possible that somebody listening to this podcast has never heard of you too. So can you give us a bit of the background of why Leverage Leadership and Leverage Leadership 2.0?
Yeah, and you'll hear some similar themes that we just discussed. But I think what I've discovered about myself is that since I was a young boy, I was just obsessed with imitating my heroes.
Okay.
And so to make the link, I grew up in Chicago. So yes, Michael Jordan was one of those heroes. And I never, you know... I could never dribble like him or shoot like him, but when I went out and practiced and tried to be like him, I got better.
Yeah.
And I started teaching in Mexico City. That was my first year of teaching, and I wasn't very good. Mm-hmm. And I walked down the hall, and I remember I would sit in the classroom of the best teacher in the school, Roxana Aparicio. And I would just, at first when I watched her, it felt like magic. Like, but little by little, I saw a technique she did here or a move she did here, something she said, and I tried it. And I got better. And that carried over when I began as a principal and I observed other principals because I had no idea what I was doing and just watched them and learned and tried to imitate them. You know, fast forward 20 years later, and it's what I've spent my life doing is mm-hmm. observing excellence and trying to codify it in a way that can help others follow it. And when I originally wrote Leverage Leadership, my playground, you could say, or my laboratory had been my own schools.
Right.
The group of, at that point, it was 15 schools that I was leading. And I was just codifying the best practices across my strongest leaders in those 15 schools. But with the success that came from Driven by Data and Leverage Leadership, leaders all across the world started to use it and try it. And it created a new feedback loop of like, wow, that part was too confusing for me. How do we make that simpler? And this part didn't work quite as well as I would have hoped on my Indian reservation in New Mexico or Native American reservation. And this didn't work as well in Nigeria. And so it helped me start to say, okay, what is the universal practice here that works for everyone? And so that's where Leverage Leadership 2.0 came about, is a simplification of what we were seeing worked across any type of school. And so we now have case studies from the globe, from right. Santiago, Chile, to Dallas, Texas, to New Orleans, you know, to New York, to Chicago, and to London. We see it working places and in places where 90% of the students are English language learners to, mm-hmm. you know, 100% free reduced lunch. As I've shared to many people, I have focused on studying leaders in urban schools or low-income schools mm-hmm. because I feel like that's our greatest need, is to create schools of excellence for every child. But also, if you can make it work there, then it's something, it's not based on the level of education the child brought to you. It's based on what you built to untap their potential and what they have. And so that's what brought us Leverage Leadership 2.0 and all the lessons we've learned along the way.
And what I'm hearing you say too, it's what you bring. It's the value you bring to the organization. You know, it's easier to point at the kid or the family, you know, the community or whatever, and say, that's why we haven't reached this level, because it's a scapegoat. But you're just letting yourself off the hook, and it's a lack of accountability self for yourself. And so you have to, I think what I'm hearing you say is focus on what are you bringing? What is the value you bring to the organization? Am I getting that right?
Yeah, I think there's one of the words that I find unhelpful. One of the debates that I find unhelpful in education is when people accuse other people of not having high expectations for children. Mm. Everybody wants high expectations for children. Mm-hmm. The problem is not the philosophy. The problem is, what are we doing to make those a reality? And too often we debate pedagogy and philosophy and belief system. And you'll never win a debate on beliefs. Mm-hmm. Because everybody will get defensive to defend their own beliefs. What we can win over is, like, what are the things we can do that allow children learning to fly, allow them to take off? And if you do that, it changes the conversation about what our philosophy is to, let's just help students learn to the highest levels possible. And when you can show them a child going to Yale because of the quality of education they received, and no matter where they started in preschool, it shows you that it is possible for us to create quality education for every child. Children are not the limitation. We are. Right. And if we can remind ourselves of that, we can create greatness for all children. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And Paul, I'm loving this discussion, but I think this would be a great part where we can pause and hear a message from our sponsors. Today's show is proudly sponsored by Organized Binder, a program which gives students daily exposure to goal setting, reflective learning, time and task management, study strategies, organization skills, and more. Organized Binder's color-coded system is implemented by the teacher through parallel process with students, helping them create a predictable and dependable classroom routine. You can learn more and improve your students' executive functioning and non-cognitive skills at organizedbinder.com. All right, and we're back with Paul Bambrick Santoyo, and we're talking Leverage Leadership 2.0, education and leadership in general. And this has been a very insightful and engaging conversation. So, Paul, again, thanks for being my guest. You just shared the story of why Leverage Leadership and Leverage Leadership 2.0. And before we hit some questions that the listeners would they'd come find me, Paul, if I didn't ask these questions. So we have to get them. You know, is there anything we missed in terms of leverage leadership that you want to share with our listeners right here?
I think some people have asked me, so what are, like, the key skills that I have to have as a leader to be successful?
Yeah.
And I think what distinguishes a great school from an average school is how a leader uses their time. Mm-hmm. And after working with so many schools, it's not how it goes in your ideal week. It's not how many teachers you observe when there's no crisis, and right. how many you know, PDs you run effectively when there's nothing going wrong, because there are going to be crises every single week. Mm-hmm. The key is, how are you using your time week to week? And the leaders who make change happen are relentless about using their time in what matters most. And the second thing they do is they make sure we have a culture of practice that we've mentioned.
Right.
But when you put those two things together, it creates a laser-like focus on the core. And the core is a quality culture where kids are coming to school, going to class, on task, motivated to learn, and where there is a level of instruction that allows them to learn. And that is built by the quality of our planning, the quality of our feedback, the quality of our meetings where we look at student work, the quality of our PD. When you create culture and then instruction side by side, you create a great school. But how you use your time will determine whether or not that becomes a reality. Hmm.
Paul, Tony Robbins is famous for saying that quality questions create a quality life, that successful people ask better questions, and as a result, they get better answers. What's one question you'd encourage our listeners to ask more as a school leader?
One of the best things for me is to for Michael Ambrese is a colleague of mine. He's been our chief operating officer for years. And he has a meeting that he calls a monthly step back. It's not new. It's happened everywhere else. But what it meant for me was that once a month, I would meet with him. And the only question on the agenda is, what isn't working for you right now? You know, what isn't working? And it would force me to stop what I'm doing, not come up with a prepared agenda, and just say, what is not working for me? Not what is not working for the school, because the school is going to have its issues, but what is not working for me? And I have to ask myself, where was I getting too stressed out? Where was I finding the work like not tenable? Where was I running into a wall? And take a moment to step back and say, what would I do differently? And that what would I do differently turns from a theoretical exercise to a concrete one.
Yeah.
In that step back, so what changes can I make right now to make things work better? And I think when you're a school leader, you're so immersed in the work that you can forget to lift up your head and breathe and take a breath before right. you start swimming again. And that simple act of saying once a month, I'd lock in a 90-minute meeting, like leave the building, or go out for a drink or for a coffee and just say, what's not working? What can we do? Is a question that you don't want to ask every day or just beat yourself up, but you want to give yourself a time to do that and say, I can change course. I'm not controlled by others. Like, it's not like I can't do anything. I do have the ability to make an adjustment. And it's the sort of question that I try to ask myself consistently. And I think as a novice leader or as a veteran leader, the value is tremendous.
Yeah. Yeah. Paul, what do you do to take a breath?
So about 6 years ago, maybe 8 years ago now, I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gaining weight. Like, I've got three children of my own. I'm like, I do not want to be that sort of parent or grandparent who just can't run around with their kids.
Yeah.
And not motivated. And so I decided I needed to make a routine for myself outside of the workaholism that school education leadership can be. And so I just started regular exercise. I started P90X, if you ever heard of it.
Yeah.
That's formed my life. And then I started some daily meditation. And as I started my morning, was always, even if I had to get up super early, exercise and some daily meditation. Mm-hmm. And it was transformative for me. And then the second part is I have three children, as many educators do. My children are a little older now. I have a college student, a high school student, and a middle school student. But I made a commitment that whatever time I got home from school, those next few hours were for my kids and my wife. That I was going to put down the phone, put down the email, and just say, I'm going to live in your world with you and just root myself again. That whatever I was doing at school doesn't matter that much as my own child in front of me in this moment. And then if I picked up a laptop again at 8 p.m. or 9 p.m. and started working, I would do it. But I would first press pause and make sure the work didn't bleed into my first few hours. And those things have been my lifeblood to keep me going and to keep me energized.
Have you ever read Deep Work by any chance by Cal Newport?
No, I haven't.
Cool.
We'll talk. Deep Work?
Yeah, Deep Work, Deep Work. I'll send you that. If you want to read it, I'll send it to you. Don't worry about
awesome.
That. We'll talk offline about that. But there's this academic on the East Coast, Cal Newport, wrote the book. And so his process is, he literally says to himself, shut down, complete. Like, and you know, he's an engineering mind. So he loves that very practical, like, this is the code you type in to signal to himself that my workday's over. I'm going to walk. He's at a university in Boston, so it might be Harvard or something. And I'm going to go home and I'm going to spend time, be completely intentional and focused on my family. So he has to have that process. And I was just, yeah. And when you're talking about put the phone away, you know, maybe it's a drawer you throw it in. Maybe it's a phrase you say to yourself, you know, shut work is done, shut down, complete, or whatever that might be. But I appreciate you sharing that. The last couple of questions, Paul, and then we'll round up the interview here. What's one book, video, tool, or resource that's really impacted your leadership, productivity, or quality of life in the last few months? How did it impact you?
Yeah. So we were looking at our high school results about 6 months ago and just frustrated that our SAT scores had stagnated. They had sort of stopped growing. I forgot about 6 years in a row where they were improving at our high schools. And so I was like, And we were getting really big. When I started at Uncommon Schools, we were just 5 schools. We're now 53. So we're facing this growth that was limiting our ability to continue to improve. Mm. And I was meeting with somebody who said, have you ever read The Founder's Mentality? And I said, no. And it's a book by a guy named Chris Zook and his colleague. I can't remember the other author in this moment. And they studied companies that had grown tremendously and the differences between the ones that continue to succeed and the ones that failed. Think Amazon versus Toys R Us.
Right.
And what separated two companies that were at the peak of their professions, one that kept flying and one that went bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And it was a phenomenal read. And to give you a vignette that just captured my attention, they describe the owner of the founder of something called the Oberoi Hotels. They're a luxury hotel chain in Asia.
Okay.
And the highest rated luxury hotel chain. They have a hotel in the middle of the Himalayan mountains type thing.
Right.
The founder at 80 years old, they described that what he would do he would still travel to his hotels regularly. And whatever hotel he walked into, the first thing he would do is go back into the kitchen, open up a carton of eggs and crack an egg open and see if this is the egg he would want served at breakfast.
Wow.
Then he would go to the front desk and read the log of all the guests who had called the front desk the last night mm-hmm. and what they had complained about. And one moment they saw that this woman had complained that they had served her tea too cold. And he said, you know what? I bet she's British. And she was. And so he said, why was this tea served cold? He noticed that the hotel manager had written a wonderful apology note, but it stopped there. He said, no, you got to fix the root of the problem. And so he said, I want you to study the espresso machine and study the temperature of water it's producing every hour tomorrow to see if something happens. Sure enough, at 3 p.m., the temperature of the water of the tea was much lower than it had been the rest of the day. The machine did not keep producing hot water. He said, I wonder if this is happening in every one of my hotels. Oh, it boy. Was. Yeah. And by the next day, they had changed the espresso machine in every hotel of his chain. And I thought about that. I'm like, that's what I call now cracking the eggs. Like always being present on the front line to say what's working and what's not working. And that when you grow, it doesn't absolve you from being there on the front line and learning from the people there and saying, what can we do to fix it? Mm-hmm. And then he talked about L brands. They have a Monday meeting where the only question on the agenda is what is keeping people from doing their jobs and what obstacle can we remove? And those really inspired me to think anew about making sure that now that I'm a superintendent, that I'm not so far removed, that I'm not in the weeds figuring out how to fix something and how to act, and also how to listen to the people who are there every day to make sure we're doing the things that matter most. So highly recommend that as a non-educational book that I think has wonderful lessons for those of us in education.
The Founder's Mentality, and we'll have that linked up for the listeners there in the show notes, along with Leverage Leadership 2.0, two books we highly recommend here on the podcast. Great. Well, Paul, you've made it to the end. You've been a phenomenal guest. This is the listener's favorite question, so I'm excited to see how you'll answer. But you're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by any resources. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you build your dream school? What would be your top three priorities?
I truly believe that to create a great school, you plan backwards. And for me, planning backwards is creating a school where every child can succeed and whatever they choose to do after school, after high school, which means they're prepared to succeed in college and life beyond. They might choose not to go to college, but they have the skills that they could go if they wanted to. And so for me, when I think about developing K-12 schools that do that, first, you want a culture where kids want to come to school, but also a culture where learning is held sacred, that they know they have a safe place where they can be smart. It's okay to be a nerd. And everybody wants to be one.
It's celebrated. We love being
there. It's a celebratory thing. And the second, where teachers and leaders are relentless about paying attention to whether or not students learned. And like the whole conversation in any faculty room is, John did not learn today. I don't know what went wrong with my teaching. Let's think differently about it. Because that's where innovation comes. It's magical. And then the third thing for me, if you look at the prediction of college success, the number one predictions are your SAT score, as much as people wouldn't like to hear it, your GPA, because it's a measure of your work habits, basically. It's a measure
if you
of your
show
work
up.
And then the third is sustained involvement in a singular activity that develops over time. You start as a writer on your yearbook, and then you're an editor, a copy editor, and then you're the editor in chief. Those children fly because they grew in leadership and activity. If we could find and build schools where every child had an activity that they loved, where they could grow in and get good at, and it would carry them to lifelong success. For me, it would mean that every child had their niche. You have the yearbook, the debate team, the anime club, you know, the theater, that every child had an activity. They're like, I'm excited to come to school, not only because of what I'm learning during the day, but what I get a chance to do that's going to be sustaining me for the rest of my life. If you've noticed, I haven't painted a school that is that uniquely different than what a great school could possibly be today. But I truly believe that if we do those things, we've succeeded as educators and providing our children a platform to be the leaders of tomorrow.
It's wonderful. Well, Paul, thanks again for being on the show. Any parting words of advice, and what's the best way for listeners to get a hold of you?
The number one thing that goes wrong for educators is when we let the light die in our own eyes because we've gotten so jaded or so frustrated. Because when our light dies, that's when children's lights will die.
Right.
Because they don't see it in our eyes. And so just keep that light burning bright. Do what you need to do to keep your motivation up. You know, go and learn from others. Never stay in a rut, because that's your gift to your children. And if you want to stay in touch, you can always email me. I promise you I'll respond one day. It might take me months because my inbox is so full, but I will respond. And there's always sort of workshops that we lead across the country that you're welcome to check out if there's something you'd like to learn more about a particular lever of instructional leadership. You're welcome.
Is there a website you want our listeners to go to then to sign up for one of those workshops?
Yeah, you can just go to, you can just type in Leverage Leadership Institute.
Okay.
And look there. You can also go to Uncommon Schools and look at our workshops that are offered all across the country, if those are of interest to you. But more importantly, just keep up the good work.
And we'll link those up for you listeners in the show notes as well. Paul, thanks again for being my guest.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, better leaders, just a few more things before you take off. I created a new resource for you called The 3 Leadership Questions I Ask Every Day. You can download the resource by visiting betterleadersbetterschools.com. If you enjoyed today's episode, make sure you subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. This helps me in a few ways. It gives the show some social proof, it encourages new people to listen to the show, and it improves the ranking of the show and therefore helps me serve more school leaders. If you want extra credit and some good vibes, share your biggest takeaway from the show and tag me on Twitter and Instagram. My handle is Alien Earbud, an anagram for my name, Daniel Bauer, and make sure to use the hashtag BLBS. This Sunday is the weekend resource. Join over 3,000 school leaders that get this resource delivered every week. In the weekend resource, I share content curated specifically for school leaders. You'll get articles, videos, templates and exercises, coaching tips, inspirational quotes, invitations to free Friday group coaching, which is an exclusive offer made available only to newsletter subscribers in the Better Leaders, Better Schools tribe, and links to all the content I created for you this past week. You can subscribe at betterleadersbetterschools.com/weekend-resource. And remember, life is 10% of what happens to you and 90% of how you react to it. Go out there today and be a better leader.